Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents. Tell me why you're special. You guys, this is the arena where we don't run from our story. We face it, we feel it, and then decide what we're going to do with it. Because the truth is, some of us didn't grow up in safety. Some of us didn't feel seen. Some of us learned how to survive before we ever learned how to live. But God does not waste pain. He uses it, He refines it, He redeems it. And the parts of your story that you wanted to hide, these might be the exact parts that set someone else free. So if you've ever felt like you didn't belong anywhere, this conversation is for you. Today's guest is Jonzel Anderson. I'm super excited that he took time out of his day to sit in the hot seat. He is a therapist, a storyteller, and someone who turned survival into something powerful. Jonzel, welcome to Tell Me Why You're Special. I launch everybody right out the gate into the first question, which is, your elevator pitch. Tell us who you are, what you do, and what makes you special, darling.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for having me.
Of course.
My name is Jonzel Anderson. I am a therapist and a storyteller. My alter ego is a comedian, a DJ, a part-time assassin, and a librarian. I love music. I love books. You see how I didn't allow you for a follow-up
I
there.
love it.
I am a girl dad. My daughter is 6 years old. She is dynamically neurodivergent. I love the color green. I love black people. I like to travel, and I am determined to find peace and joy in a chaotic world. So
Yeah.
that's who I am.
That's amazing. You starting off with how I feel like you describe your story, it's the sound and silence of survival. What does that actually mean?
The sound and the silence of survival. So that first line of the bio of the back of my book was actually written by a friend who is a amazing writer. You will have her book someday, I'm sure. But the sound and the silence of survival, the sound meaning I am always thinking musically. When I listen to music, I see colors. I attribute songs to memories. It's very interwoven. However, when you're going through something, there is silence that people see from the outside because they don't always know what you're going through. And the sound and the silence of survival also illustrates that transcendence from I was silenced or I wasn't safe, and now I'm unapologetically here, and I've got something to say. I love the dance between those two words and how they complement but also oppose each other.
Yeah. How I totally understand that. I see that. How did your childhood abuse and neglect, how did that shape how you saw yourself?
It on a broad for a broad answer to that question, it taught me that I don't matter.
Okay.
It in the time, it showed me you don't matter, you're not wanted, you're an inconvenience. However, something bigger than that abuse lived inside of me. I liken it to hope or some sort of spirit. And because it's, I'm not necessarily tied to the word resilience, but there was something special within me that reminded me that that wasn't my end all be all. And so in the book, Mixtape, a Memoir, there is a section where the earlier years was miseducation, and then the section after that is unlearning. So I had to unlearn a lot of these patterns that were ingrained at a young age. And While it taught me that the world isn't safe, that you're not going to be loved, liked, or understood, in unlearning, I came to awareness that not only can I be loved, liked, and understood, but I'm worthy of that, because I'm human, and we're designed to be in community with each other. I just had to get away from the people who were not invested in providing that connection.
What role did your grandmother play in survival?
My grandmother is a complex character and remains to be to this day. In the earlier parts of the book, you'll see her as my hero. She was the one who saw me and who loved me and who took time and made me feel special. Towards adolescence, she kind of started to lean into what the others were doing as far as like the bullying, the body shaming, and she started to turn into the op. That kind of hit ahead around the time I was finishing high school and starting college. Then there was some like mending and healing, I think, in my early adulthood. And nowadays, she is, I made a promise when I was very young that when she was old, I would take care of her. And so now she's in her 80s, and I pay her rent, and I bought her last two cars for her, and so I provide for her financially. But she's kind of a hybrid between being like one of the remaining, I guess, figures from my family of origin. However, there are still boundaries that I have to have with her for my own emotional safety.
And I think that is an important statement right there, that no matter what, I feel like whether it's family or whoever it is that's present, I definitely want the listeners to see that as a takeaway, that it's possible to still have boundaries. It doesn't matter the relationship, you should always have the boundaries, and there's no exception. Like, just because it's grandma doesn't mean that we can't still protect ourselves. You talk about your inner voice. When did that start, and how did it protect you?
I don't know when it started. I think it transcends this physical plane. If you read my story, you'll notice that I have my relationship with spirit is dynamic. It started with like indoctrination into Roman Catholicism, and then there was an era of quote rebelling into like the Protestant side of things, and then I got into like a different indoctrination pocket when I was in grad school, and then deconstructing in my 20s, and now it's more of a what remains of maybe say the Christian Holy Spirit, but it is combined with like a West African spirituality, more specifically a knowing of my West African ancestors. But when I say that inner voice, I think that what remains today, I think, has always been, if that makes sense. And never, despite all of the abuse, the things that other people listening to my, and I'm sweating, by the way, because I went on a run earlier, so I'm like blotting the sweat.
Dontell, it's fine. I'm intimidating. Just tell people that, to say she's so sweaty.
I'm in the hot seat that I'm just like, I'm sweating,
That's so
no, you're
funny.
super nice. Despite everything that I went through, and there were times where I was very, very, very close and thought I was giving up, but that voice, even if it was very muted and faint and whispering, never stopped telling me that I had what it took to survive. And that's kind of goes back to what you said about the sound and the silence of survival, right? And so now it's loud. Even in the month or two leading up to the book coming out, I started dating again in November, and I am a beautiful person, so naturally, there's lots of, options out here. And I was getting distracted, right? I was kind of staying up late and being on the apps and, going out and whatever. But I woke up one day and my ancestors, and when I say ancestors, I mean the black ones, because I'm mixed race, but I'm talking
Okay.
about my West African ones. They were like, "You're out of alignment." And I was kind of taken aback. And then I was like, "You're not wrong." And then I sat up because I was like, "Well, clearly I'm not going back to sleep now." I just snatched the bonnet off and I got up and did yoga or whatever because clearly I'm out of alignment. But it was a reminder that this story, mixtape and memoir that had been put in motion, and they're reminding me that this is going to be bigger than I can imagine. I was at the last kind of part of the race and I was getting distracted. So I had to lock back in, as the children say. And I did that. And it's a reminder that the hope that I may have doubted at times is here. It's coming to fruition. And that's why I say the voice now is much louder. Even when I'm getting, say, overwhelmed or, whatever, I asked for, or I knew that this was going to be something that was more than I could understand. And it actually is like, and so rather than being like, "Oh, I've got to, do another interview or something," I'm not mad about that, because the story, the survival deserves the shine. And the voice is very loud to remind me that this isn't even the end of it. This is a springboard. There's more in store. So the voice is very loud these days, and I'm here for the ride.
That's amazing. I have to change gears on this conversation because, first of all,
Okay.
I am obsessed with Christ. So I'm intrigued with your story that you're listening to ancestors. But when you first started, you made a declaration. You're like, I love black people. And so that's a beautiful statement. My question is like that, he had to declare that. Like, if someone's gonna look at you and think he doesn't love black people. So I'm gonna make that a bold statement. But then you're like making sure that we know it's black ancestors talking to you. Do you not have white spirits talk to you? Or you do, they're just not the same voice. Or I guess what's the difference?
Yeah, good
I
question. So, yeah, great question. So I am mixed race. I have a white mother and a West African father. Kind of like, growing up in the Christian spaces,
Yeah.
the demonstration was white Jesus. It was, those images. And it's not to say that I have it all figured out, right?
Right. Well, this
But
is your
also,
story, your perspective. So
correct. Yeah, yeah,
what you see, I love that. I honor that. There's
Yeah.
space for that.
Yeah. And so, in my kind of deconstruction, and also looking at my story is painted by the fact that I'm black, but I was raised in whiteness. And I assert I love black people because my upbringing was not an environment that loved black people. It was, my white caregivers were my first racists, and I survived that environment up until young adulthood, right? So in my lived experience, but also experiences interacting with society, with interactions with law enforcement, and the, I would say, emboldening of, white supremacy efforts in this country and things like that. My, I guess, focus is that of tapping into the roots of my blackness that was suppressed and demonized as a child. So it's not to say that I don't have white ancestors, because clearly half of me is. It's more so that my intention and focus is to be connected with that identity at this time. Not to say that it doesn't exist, but more so to set my intention of where I'm finding that joy and that identity from.
So you believe that our race is our identity?
No. I live in a world that race is a social construct, just like capitalism, patriarchy, there are these constructs that we were born into this world, and these concepts are here. So because those concepts are here, it has interacted with me as a human, right? Like
Okay.
growing up mixed race, they called me mixed, but they said, oh, the confusing of what are you, right? And so I don't necessarily place my identity solely on being black. I say I'm John Zell,
Yeah, that's what I
but
see.
because yeah, but we have to, but in this these systems that we live in, they want to categorize you. So if
Okay.
we're going to do that, okay, I'm biracial black, I'm
Yeah.
bisexual, I am a father, I am an American citizen, I am what categories do you want to put me in to help you
Yeah.
understand, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I'm John Zell.
Well, John Zell, I say F the categories, F the world. Just be
Fuck
who
the
you are. The
categories, yeah.
most of that, because if I had to describe who I was and where I fit, it would be exhausting. So
Yes.
I'm Brandon. Like, that's it. Like,
Yeah.
we're here. So I love that. Okay. Thank you so much for being open to that conversation, because I do. I love the conversations, especially absolutely different perspectives and different experience in the human world, and to be able to sit down, and talk about that stuff without, everyone being defensive. And I think it's beautiful that you can explain that to me and make it make sense. So I want to talk about, let's get back to your story here now that my brain let me digress. I
Oh,
want
that's okay.
to what is something about your childhood? Because, I went through healing and things that I thought I was over, like my relationship with my mom. I think, man, I healed that a long time ago, but it still comes up. And I'm just like, dang it. So it's never really going to go away, right? The growth is going to happen through different periods. So what is something about your childhood that still impacts you today?
Something about my childhood that still impacts me today is that I live with body dysmorphia.
Okay.
I was bullied. I mean, again, my first racists were my family of origin, and my
Yeah.
first bullies were the same people. So about what they perceived me to be as chubby, right? And
Okay.
that was so deeply ingrained. And then, my formative years and things like that. And even though, obviously, like I told you, I went on a run, I literally just ran like a 5K for fun this morning and
Yeah.
yesterday. I'm fit, I'm, healthy and all this stuff. Despite being a therapist over a decade, despite going to a lot of therapy, despite, working through the trauma
Yeah.
and the negative self-talk and things like that, wiring that was so deeply ingrained that I'm not going to say that my caregivers didn't know what they were doing,
Yeah.
but they didn't consider the long-term effects of what they were doing in many ways. But
Right.
I can be a whole, adult who helps other people through therapy and through my stories and things like that, and still be a person who sometimes can look in the mirror and see something distorted. And it's part of who I am, but at least I'm getting better at recognizing that it is a distortion and not letting it run me like it used to.
Yeah. No, I can totally see that, and I think a lot of people can relate to that message of like you still kind of catch yourself, and maybe it's not a mirror, you guys listening, maybe it's just you get around certain people and it tries to bring you back to the person that you were before. Just bringing you back to the version before you were healed or before things made sense. So I think that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Why do you think Okay, because like the whole message of my show is like everybody has a story. Everybody's going through something. Everybody's been through something, right? Why do you think so many people stay silent and sit on their message when it comes to what they've been through?
If you give me a second,
Yeah.
I love quotes. And so Let me find this one. So Maya Angelou said, well, this is a derivative of a quote. I'm reading this book called Writing, Creativity, and Soul by Sue Monk Kidd. And on the first page, she says that she was going to see Maya Angelou. And I sat in the sixth row of a large auditorium while the tall woman with the powerful presence spoke about the cost of carrying untold stories inside, about wielding a voice in the world, about writing that brings the reader alive. And the thing that stood out to me about that is the cost of carrying untold stories inside. And so that's my answer, is there is a great cost to carrying your untold stories inside. So your question of why do people keep it in? It's familiar. The silence of survival. But we all know that there is catharsis with speaking, with taking up space, with making noise, right? And there could be a lot of different things going on. Well, how would I tell the story? Or what will happen if I tell the story, right? And those things matter too. But for me, I find healing in the telling. And I know I'm talented enough to articulate it in a way that is true to me. And then I know a lot of people worry about, well, what if so and so reads this, or what if so and so? I once heard in a workshop that I attended about writing memoirs that it's unlikely that the people who harmed you are going to read your story. But if they do and they're offended, the response, the takeaway would be, well, if you didn't want to be written about, you should have behaved better.
That makes sense.
So I don't know if anyone's listening and they are, paying that cost of holding their untold stories inside, but if you're worried about what other people will think, why are you paying the cost to hold the story inside when you didn't ask for that to happen to you? So,
No, I think that's incredible. That would have been a great ending to the show. Like, that is powerful right there. But so I want to talk about your book really fast because, you were just talking about you knew you could articulate something that represents you fully. And so the book is told in tracks. Why did
yes.
you choose that structure?
I love music, like I told you in the beginning. I think musically, I mentioned comedian, DJ, part-time assassin, librarian. So the DJ, any circumstance I can come up with I can come up with a song that compliments, or someone says something and I'm like, oh, that's like this song. I'm constantly sharing music links with my friends. And I think, well, I won't say I think, I know that music can complement, it can resonate, it can encourage. And the way I've done it in the book is I wanted to, instead of a table of contents, I wanted a soundtrack. I think of this as if this is a movie about my life, I'm concerned about what the soundtrack is. And instead of chapters, they're tracks. It's a continuation. It's not, they're not neat, defined things. It's a flow. It's a continuation. Throughout the book, I have interludes in which I am breaking the fourth wall and speaking directly to the reader, which is a way to, as an adult who has seen, and learned, I'm able to nurture that inner child that I'm portraying in the book, right? I can speak back and talk to what I know now, this is what was going on, but then I can snap back out of it and be in the moment. I love the structure, and so that gave me a framework to tell my story in a unique way. But then also the word mixtape has the word mixed in it, MIXT, which is a not the exact spelling, but mix is in the identity. So I like that there was a double meaning there.
Yeah, that is awesome. And it sounds incredible. Where can people find your book?
So my book is available wherever books are sold. The easiest way to find the various formats would be johnzell.co. So JOHN like Nancy, Z like zebra, ELLE dot co, not com, but co, CO. And there you can find the physical copies of the book, the ebook. It's available in an audiobook. And I also have a link there if you want to get a signed copy as well. You can order it. So that's the best place to go to grab it. But yeah, anywhere books are sold.
Right, that's amazing. And the links are in the show notes, you guys, so make sure you check that out. My last question for you today. If you stopped carrying the version of yourself that was shaped by survival, who would you be at your core?
I am trying every day to make this happen, not just to think about it. The version of myself shaped by survival, that survival complex that I developed in adulthood has gotten in the way of me having fun and being free. Because it limits me. It was a survival at one point, but now I've outgrown it, and it can hold me back if I revert to it. So, to answer your question, if I stopped living that version, I would be free. I would be peaceful and I would be joyful. So, I'm seeking to make that happen daily.
Yeah, that's beautiful honesty. So you guys understand he's saying it doesn't happen overnight. It is a work in progress, and every day it's just us becoming closer to the core of who we are, not with any of the noise around us, not with, the expectations or the beliefs that were put on us when we were little. It is right now you get to step away from everything you think has defined you and really become who you are at your core, just as a human, outside of all the noise, just who you are as a human. Johnzell, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what makes you special. And it's not just your story, it's your willingness to tell it. You took something that could have stayed buried, something that you could have kept silent, and you've turned it into something that you are using to help people feel seen. And I think that is healing. I think that is courageous. And I think that's what makes you special. To everyone listening, you are not disqualified by what you've been through, okay? God did not bring you through it just to leave you there. There is purpose in it. There is growth in it. There is power in it. So I want you to be honest with yourself. I want you to be grounded. And remember, your mess is your message. Even the pain, even the confusion, even the parts of your story that you didn't choose, that is where your voice comes from. And if you've been feeling that pull to share your story, to use your voice, to actually say the shit that matters, you don't have to wait until it's all cleaned up, okay? We don't want pretty packaged stuff here. I'm never going to have a fun conversation with someone who has it all figured out because what's the point? Okay. That's why I created a podcast support group as well, a place where you can start where you are, speak truth, and build something real without overthinking every step. So if that's been on your heart, come join me over there. If this episode speaks to you, please make sure you get resourced with Johnzell, get his book, and share the episode with someone that you think really needs to hear this. Okay, we can't reach the people that need to hear the core message of this show without your help. Okay, and if you guys are ready for the hot seat, please come tell me what makes you special.